Chris is unable to get the intensive care that he needs here around Meredith, he was forced to move to the city. 10 years ago, you first brought this issue to national attention. Your son being forced to live in an old age nursing home because of an acquired brain injury. In that 10 years since then, you've become quite the activist. What's changed for you since then?
Oh, there's been huge, huge changes. I mean, I just couldn't. I have worked in the health field prior to Chris's injury, but I had no idea of the situation for this group of people. And I'm not condemning nursing homes, far from it. They're the most amazing old people who've had amazing lives. There's no place actually for people with very severe brain injury who are medically vulnerable, I suppose, narrow margin of health. So I began to hear of other families. In 2001 we started a group for around this issue of young people with acquired brain injury in nursing homes. We started the consortium, a young people nursing homes consortium, and a group called Inability Possibility, a small volunteer group. Then in 2004, the nursing home where Chris was closing, and so we formed what we call the What Does Chris Want group, which is a group of friends and family. It started off at about 18 people. It still runs at about that. We've met not less than monthly since then. It's an amazing group of people. And a mate of Chris's who was vice captain at St. Pat's, Rich Riley, and I have been probably the front people for the political and media sort of advocacy. We didn't know where we were going to start with, and we've learned a huge amount. But the system is just so complex for this group of people, and it's still not fixed.
The idea of forming a committee to oversee the future care and prospects of your son, that's, I think, would be an interesting idea to many parents who find themselves carers of their children. How did you come about that idea, and how has it worked?
I suppose it started, Chris and I and Jack have always had a very open, and that didn't mean we always agreed with one another, but we had to agree to disagree on some things. Our daughter died in a car accident in 1988, and that was a profound experience for us. And we realised that life was precious, and so we tried to live, I suppose, in the moment. So if we had something on our minds, we would say it to one another. So Chris had a very wide and diverse friendship network, and I've got to know Chris through them in a way that I didn't know him before. So even in Singapore, but certainly when we came back to Melbourne, I knew that Jack and I were going to face very difficult decisions for Chris around, you know, ceasing treatment, all that sort of stuff. And I felt that we needed the voice, his voice in there, in a different way from the way we held it. So we formed a group, two of his friends, a doctor and a lawyer friend. We called it the Group of Four. And we made pretty big decisions, the four of us. And I trusted the wisdom of that group. I trusted it for Chris. So then along the way, So the same sort of principle, I suppose, around the Young People in Nursing Homes Consortium. That was a group of people from various, some of them service providers, some of them families, some of them organisational. And we're all working in different compartments. So look, let's get together and see how we can work around this. But the What Does Chris Want group, we tried to choose people from various groups. We know that we're not going to be around forever. And the way Chris is going, he has got no intention of dropping off the planet. So we felt that it was really important, but sort of for him in the future, but also for his voice and their continuing relationship with him. So them understanding where he is now, because he's a 42-year-old now. He's not a 28-year-old. And one of the problems, the big issues for young people who have acquired brain injury, who can no longer speak, is that they get frozen in time, and so they're not maturing, I suppose. And we've seen different moments with Chris. So I try to get his friends perspective as 40-odd-year-olds now and not the 28-year-olds. So the group, that's been really important. And there's a confidence in the group. It's amazing. We come into that group. It's a two-hour meeting once a month. You know, sometimes we're facing situations that are really difficult. And it's amazing. It's pretty good discussion, rigorous, but we're all sort of trust the decision that comes out at the end. So I'd really, I think for somebody who's got an acquired disability and can't speak, then that's even more important. So I'd encourage anyone to, but you've really got to be able to listen to people, and I suppose the process at the meeting is the, you know, important.
The work you've done with the group has since become benchmarks for care for people with acquired brain injury. Can you tell us how that's worked in the last couple of years? What the work you've done with the committee, how that's affected healthcare standards in Victoria?
Back in a couple of years ago, or 5 or 6 years ago, we realised early on in the, I think it was about 1999, I wrote a case study for a study that Melbourne City Mission was doing. And we realised then that what we'd, the approach or model we'd developed with Chris had worked for others. So there were other young people in that first nursing home. So the socio-medical model, which World Health Care Organization called for in 2001, we've published the book. Now, how it's affected, in 2005, COAG made an agreement around young people in nursing homes, a 5-year agreement with the states, and it was $244 million, I think, over the 5 years. So that was rolled out in Victoria. We were very, very influential in that. We lobbied for a 10-person place for Chris and for others like him. I've been on reference groups and advisory groups for the department, but we're in the situation at the moment where Chris is likely to be worse off. We have another meeting with the department coming up, but it's unlikely that he will actually move there. At the moment, Chris has aged care. He's in an aged care bed, but he's very well cared for. He's got his own team of carers who come in. He has his own therapists. The carers are portable, so they can come to the farm, they can go out with him, not all of them, but they drive the bus. So it makes him more independent, I suppose. And so we have control. But if he goes to the new place, it's going to be fine for some people. It will be fine. It may be what people want, but it means that one organisation is both landlord, service provider and holds Chris's funds. And we feel that we're the best people to be making those choices. It would mean he wouldn't get back to the farm, which would destroy him. It's just not on. A nice house doesn't make a good life. This is new territory. When Chris had his injury in 96, there was no hope. It was vegetative, the brain couldn't make new connections, and so there was no hope. And we knew he was hearing and understanding, and it was friends who helped to make that picture. And many of them are professionals who are not going to just say it because they think Mims needs to hear it. And so over those years, we knew that, and it's really only in about 2000, early 2000s, that the understanding the brain was turned on its head. Neuroscience has exploded since then, and we now know that the brain can make new connections and that an enriched environment is one of the most critical factors. And I think Chris has been fortunate in that we've always spoken to him as if, you know, as we always would. Many people don't have that experience, but we're at the cusp. One of his doctors told me recently that this is the new frontier. The brain is the new frontier of medical science. And I really believe that. We know now with the new imaging, in fact, one of Chris's doctors, Mark Cook, is doing research on it, that so-called vegetative people are not really vegetative. That when they do the functional MRI and talk them through playing tennis or walking around a familiar place, the brain lights up in exactly the same way as it does in a normal person. So it's really groundbreaking stuff. And it's strange, you know, because some of Chris's friends have said to me at various times, you know, we always thought he'd be a leader of some in some way. We never dreamed it was going to be like this.